Hey, this is Zach from Coheed and Cambria, and you're listening to the All Things Coheed podcast. Cool. All right. Enjoy.
Welcome home to the All Things Coheed podcast.
I'm Devin.
And I'm a guy named Rob.
Hee hee, happy.
What's up, Devin? How are you doing, man?
Rob, I'm doing well. Not only are we here to talk about My Brother's Blood Machine issues 2 and 3, Claudio just did a live stream on Twitch where he covered his own songs, recreating tracks from My Brother's Blood Machine from scratch, singing them along with Chandra. Oh my God.
It's so based. I was there. I was watching, but only because Devin texted me and was just like, you need to get in this live stream right now. And I did, and I don't regret it, because he played, what, 4 songs? Something like that?
I believe so.
He played the Margaretville Dance. I'm pretty sure it's the Prizefighter Inferno on TikTok.
Yes.
He's posting a lot of his recreations because he no longer has access to open the files originally for My Brother's Blood Machine. And he was looking at recreating it, I guess, for practice. He kind of alluded to maybe them being playing live at some point or another. Nothing confirmed, obviously, but he kind of alluded to that idea that he was trying to retread and, you know, muscle memory back the lyrics and playing the song live. So it's super cool. It's something I'm very excited about. I remember begging for 78, and he did mention that he wasn't planning on trying to recreate 78 right now. But he did do the Missing McLeod Boys. He did do Margaretville Dance, like we said. Our Darling Daughter You Are, Cecilia Marie. He played a little bit of that. And the Fight of Moses Early and Sir Arthur McLeod was also on that list, which is super fucking cool. And I love that all of this is happening right as the last 2 issues of My Brother's Blood Machine are basically, like, almost out. By the way, Devin, I don't know if you know this, and you may have to cut this out of the podcast, but I was doing some looking, and one of the websites has the cover art and the synopsis of the last issue of My Brother's Blood Machine.
Is it the Previews World website?
Yes. Did you read what it says about issue 6?
Actually, no. I didn't read anything about any of the upcoming issues. I've been trying to avoid spoilers for them.
I'm going to tell you this right now, between me and you, and I'm not going to spoil you. Number one, they have the first 3 pages, and it is spoilers.
Oh, shit.
Like, it is spoilers.
So, if you're avoiding spoilers, avoid the Previews World website for There's Blood Machine.
Yeah, I'm very surprised at how it's ending as well. I want to say that. As someone who's very invested in the story of the Blood Machine, it's taken a turn I could not expect.
Well, I'm very excited. I think right now we have up to issue 4. But this episode, we are only covering issues 2 and 3. And then I believe we'll do 4 and 5. And then we'll save episode 6 for a finale and just general overview of everything.
That's probably the best move, because issue 5 is going to be hefty. From what I've seen from previews, it's going to be a very hefty lore episode.
Now, I've been enjoying this read so far, you know, before we really get into it and cover the merch for today and all that jazz. I really have been enjoying the story. I just think that 6 issues, you know, even if we're just talking from 1 to 3, 6 issues might be a little too short. I think this could have gotten away with being 8 issues and kind of having some room to breathe. But maybe that's also intentional, like this very almost, I don't want to say claustrophobic, but it seems like everything's moving so fast and so, like, it does keep you on the edge of your seat, but.
Here's the thing, Devin. I would normally agree with you. However, when we're looking at this and the story and the world, number one, the world is not required to be fleshed out fully. You have small town, big party, and you have a handful of characters. You've got Gunnar Recall, you've got Cecilia, you've got Arthur and Martha, you have her boyfriend, and you have, like, Moses Hurley. Like, you have a very small cast of characters. You have a familiar world. I don't think that it requires that much in order to fully tell the story. Because you have, like, you have the Bleem brothers eventually kind of expressing where their opinions came from as far as with their belief systems and why they're doing what they're doing. You have your main altercation as far as, like, plot goes, where it's like they are trying to feed people to a machine. And at that point, everything else is just, where is Cecilia going and how is this affecting her? Not so much Gunnar Recall, not so much the town. It's how it's affecting her.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that keeping it shorter and keeping a spotlight on her as the main character, it works with six issues. Even though we do want more. I would love more. But at what point is it just filler? You know what I mean? It's a short story to tell.
Yeah, it does get right to the point, and especially as we move forward, you know. We are only talking about 2 and 3, but 4 is definitely an issue.
If you compare it to the Amri Wars, like, the Amri Wars has literal wars and, like, trade agreements and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's got a full, like, 78 planet system you have to be, like, connected with to figure out how certain things connect and affect one another. Like, you listen to the albums and they're talking about wars and battles and the fabric of the universe and how it's made up. But this is like young girl, small town murder.
I'm just getting greedy. I want 8.
But, I'm curious, man.
But it does keep things tight in terms of merch, because as we have Merch Monday on a Friday, we have 4 variants for each of these issues with the US and UK previews book for each. So for issue 2, the retail variant artwork is done by Andrew Ritchie. Jetpacks Comics variant is Vero Stewart. The Revolver Magazine variant is by Gavin Fullerton. And the Evil Inc. cover is by Connor Nolan. And that comes with the Lover's card. And on the standard for issue 2, we have La Force on the cover. For issue 3, again, the retail variant is Andrew Ritchie. And the Jetpacks comic variant is Vero Stewart. The Revolver Magazine cover is by Nat Jones. And the Evil Inc. cover is by Kelly Williams. And that one comes with the Hierophant card with Le Pendu on the standard cover. Now, for issue 2, if you're collecting the previews for those, that is in the US UK previews book for November, and issue 3 is in December.
Fucking Mom Jeans, dude.
Hell yeah.
I've been on a big Mom Jeans kick. I heard the song What's Up, and I connected too much emotionally.
Yo, Death Cup is so good.
Death Cup is amazing. It's just so sad. I might cry in front of you. It's like if Tom DeLonge got sad.
Speaking of Mom Jeans, they're going to be on tour with LS Dooms this
summer. Really?
Mm-hmm. For Sad Summer.
I might actually fucking go. It's crazy. I really like Mom Jeans right now. Like, I've been going through their discography. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Speaking of discography, that second stage Turbine Blade vinyl drop.
Everyone was expecting it after two weeks ago, something like that, where they were it was like on the websites and everyone was aware. So whenever it finally dropped for the orders, everyone was just like, oh, we'll just grab it. I saw people post about it was in my cart and I still couldn't get it. It's just insane. Coheed fans are ravenous.
That was the first time I've ever had to wait in a virtual queue to buy merch.
Just clear this up for me. Is this a repress of the re-release, or is this the original release?
I believe it is the re-release.
Oh, that's dumb. If it was the original pressing, I would fucking, I'd actually buy some merch, bro.
There's the translucent black, which is what we believe, like, the retailer variant. There's the out of 500 yellow yolk, which was, like, Brooklyn Vegan, Alternative Press, Revolver, that kind of online retailer. And then there was the out of 2,500 Equal Vision Press, which went in under a minute. And they also had those cassettes that were limited to 300. But Coheed actually just tweeted, like, maybe an hour ago. They said, addressing the vinyl rollout, we / EVR made 6,000 pieces of vinyl for a repress that seemed like the right amount. We admittedly vastly underestimated the demand, and we apologize for that. We will have a tour exclusive, and we will press more by summer. Our goal is to have vinyl more freely accessible. Bear with us. We will also work with EVR to make the ordering process less chaotic or find another solution. Stay tuned. So they're trying to make right, because it was a bit of a mess. Copies are already on eBay, and it's kind of disheartening.
But what is today?
Today is April Fool's.
Worst April Fool's joke of all time.
That would be so messed up.
No, I mean, yes, it is posted on April Fool's, but I'm pretty sure they're legit about that. As far as the vinyl goes, I'm technically sharing a vinyl with Blue, because Blue is not going to bring it back to them overseas.
Hmm.
So they're leaving it at my house, allegedly, so that's fun.
I mean, for the first time in over 10 years, this gets pressed, and it was just on the website. So, yeah.
I mean, it's cool. I'm very excited about Second Stage Repress. Like, obviously, like, they knew they had to do something a while ago for Second Stage, because Second Stage hasn't gotten love since what? When's the last time they pressed anything from Second Stage?
Like, 2011?
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. So, like, you know, we had the cruise, and that was a really nice, like, yes, it's the Coheed cruise, but also there was a Second Stage theme to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like how the second cruise is going to be very In Keeping Secrets themed to celebrate the anniversary, and that's going to be awesome. But yeah, more Second Stage love for sure. I mean, we talk about all the time, like, our favorite songs, and tons of people, whether it's us or the fans, people love Godsend Conspirator. People love 33. It's pretty insane.
Godsend is the only song that's on Second Stage, you know, not counting the demos or whatever, mm-hmm. that I haven't heard live off of that record yet. I really hope they play it at some point.
I really hope so too. You know, like, top 10 for me. I love Godsend Conspirator. You know, it was the tagline of the album. Everywhere, when the album was being promoted, the tagline was,
your dreams can't last forever.
That's it. Your dreams can't last forever. It was on posters. It was on, like, every website. It was crazy. But yeah, I'm super stoked for this to be coming out. And maybe, you know, maybe these pressings, the sleeves will have some, you know, cool artwork or information or whatever. It's just like, who knows? I'm just stoked. That aside.
But that's pretty much it for the merch. You know, these Revolver variants are iffy. They're in and out of stock, I guess, as orders get canceled, what have you. But there are bundles available, so definitely check out the Revolver magazine website. And the Jetpack Comics variant, those are awesome. They're all done by the same artist. And when you place your order, you have the option to select it signed by the artist, or you can keep it unsigned by the artist.
Real quick, I do want to mention, as far as the cards go, they do directly translate to other cards in the Major Arcana with Tarot, with issue 1 being the Hermit, issue 2 being Strength, issue 3 being the Hanged Man, issue 4 being Death, issue 5 being the Devil, and issue 6 being a new card, which I guess kind of resembles Justice, maybe? It's Long Arm and Butchie is what it's called. But all the other cards are just translations of original Major Arcana cards, which I find really interesting. And once we get the whole story wrapped up and finished, I'd love to do, you know, our full deep dive episode into the concept, specifically talking about why these cards are in these issues, especially with the new cards that are included.
Right, and we can compare them with the tarot cards included with the original CD release.
So which you can still get online. You can still purchase online, I believe, at Evil Inc. And it does include the tarot cards if you are interested in ordering.
Well, with that being said, that pretty much covers all of our merch. Rob, why don't you take it away with issue two?
So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about issue two. So we're not going to do a deep dive into this, but I do kind of want to glance over some of the pages in this book, because a lot of it is tying more directly with the music than we had seen previously in the first issue. Specifically, like, the opening shot is, number one, it feels like a deep reference to Psycho, as you see, like, Cecilia in the shower. She has cut herself while shaving, and she has a trail of blood that is going down to the drain, which reminds us of, I believe it's Our Darling Daughter. God.
Word for word, this is what's going on in the comic. And it's very rare that we get those instances. So that was really cool to see the music literally come to life in this book.
This is the last you'll see in the shower, as your blood curves a path when mixed with the water. Yes, so they fully show her, the blood running down her legs, mixing with the water and going down the drain, which I'm like, oh, dude, this is exactly what I fucking want. It's like, it's perfectly connecting with lyrics, like you just said. She's getting out of the shower. We see some less than savory glances from Arthur, her father, as she's exiting, and she goes and slams her door shut. We kind of see more about the town and how it's reacting to the information that there is a missing person, Vic Fontana, and they're talking about how Gunner had just seen him recently. And Gunner was in the woods and had seen Vic Fontana while he was hunting. And Vic took one look at Gunner and saw that he was struggling and not having a really great time because his personal life is in total hell, and gives him his jacket in the woods, which is why Gunner has his coat. But they laugh it off. They literally sit there and laugh it off inside the police station as if, like, he can't be trusted. And so they go out to go find him so they can question him more. You cut back to Cecilia, who is sitting in her room. She's got posters on her wall that are very, like, you know, 60s, 70s, make love, not war. Very, like, a radioactive symbol on her wall. And she sees her doorknob on her bedroom door start to rattle. And she gets very, very upset. She is already fully clothed, so we know that she was already thinking about leaving. She grabs her backpack and she jumps out the window, heads down to the street. You have what I think is the most interesting scene of this issue, where it's Arthur picking the lock of her door. And Martha, his wife, stands there looking at him and asks him what he's doing, which I believe she clearly knows what Arthur's doing at this point. And he says that he thought he heard a noise. As she turns around, she says, "Just come back to bed, Arthur." And he walks slowly back to bed. It's like, it's such an understated moment that didn't have to be in the comic at all. But I think it shows more about Martha's headspace at this point than anything else.
You can see that she knows what's happening, but she's just not accepting it. And the look that he gives when she comes out of the shower, and he's like looking through the comic book and at you as the reader, that
haunting.
Was... Oh.
Absolutely haunting. So Cecilia bails, and she goes to Glenn's house and throws a rock at his window, which he can barely hear. You see, Glenn is a real intellectual type. He's got a space shuttle on his desk. He has a poster of mushrooms, one of a bird and vine. It's really interesting in 70s, and like a lion. But he's also listening to vinyl on his record player. And if you look closely, you can see that he has a power cable connected to his turntable, and he also has a left and right channel out into headphones while he already has speakers hooked up. It's really interesting because now I'm just like getting into Glenn, like, as a person. He's just sitting there jamming the music. It could be fucking the Who's Tommy or something. Just it's just insane. He notices Cecilia, and essentially they decide to go for a walk. and she says she's not okay and that she had to leave her house, and she offers to essentially just run away. And he throws shit into his bag, he hugs her, and decides to go with her. They head into the Anderback Woods, and he pulls out a pre-rolled joint and lights up. And we have a light shining in the woods, which was not what I anticipated. When I originally read this, I was a little disappointed, because it calls back to deep in the woods, the light burns in shadow. And I had always assumed that to be Cecilia burying her father, which she clearly has not murdered her father up to this point. But it's an interesting idea. She has a lighter and they're getting high and a little giggly. And as they continue their walk in the woods, as they're smoking, Glenn is picked up by a fucking monster. You know, a 2-ton shit bag. He's got like, I don't know how to put it. He's got like an exoskeleton onto his right arm that is holding it in place. But he's larger than any man you've ever seen. Like, he has to be at least like 10 feet tall, arms extremely long, wearing this leather belt and like pants. It's horrifying. What did you think of Longarm when you first saw him, Devin?
Oh, man. They got the classic horror vibe down so perfectly. And, you know, obviously knowing that Claudio is a big fan of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this is his version of that, right? And the visuals are certainly representative of that. And Longarm looks sick. I think Bushy is the better of the two character designs, though. The third eye he has and, like, literal jump scare.
So as they're fighting with what we can assume to be Longarm, Cecilia falls back across a branch and hits her head on a rock and is knocked out. And as she's knocked out, we see his hand wrap around her ankle and drag her into the woods even deeper. As that's happening, by the way, she's got a pair of Chuck Taylors on, which I'm like, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. We cut back to the house the next morning, and we see Martha is yelling for Cecilia to get up because she needs to go to school. And Arthur picks the lock on her door to not find her there. And so they just basically tell themselves sweet little lies and say, oh, it's probably fine. Everything's okay. We have to go. I don't want to be late. And then we cut back to Cecilia waking up, and we see the blood machine in full form. Just, you know, splashes of blood all over this thing as she gets chloroformed. It's no longer Longarm who's doing it. We see a short-statured man who I think very much resembles, like, Chucky. Like, Child's Play Chucky in a big way. He has an additional, essentially, like, face, like a growth on the side of his head that extends his mouth. And he has another eye on that side of his head. He is standing over her body, and it says, to be continued, in the bottom panel. So a lot's happening. We're introduced to our antagonist pretty rapidly. We see that Cecilia has already been drugged. We've already seen the blood machine. And there's just so much mystery around these characters that it just makes you want to read more. I think that the colors, especially in these chapters, are amazing. Everything's muted. Everything's dark and dingy, especially in the cave where they can't have a ton of light. But it's such a pretty looking book, which I believe brings us to issue 3.
Absolutely. So Gunner gets arrested. The police say Schmidt wants to talk to you. They're bringing him in. And akin to that, we see this very awkward conversation between Sally, who is Glenn's mother, and Martha. And they discuss the children being missing, but then they turn it over to the Margaretville Jubilee. And it ends on a high note, even though their kids are missing. They kind of like brush past it. And I think that that's kind of interesting. They certainly are worried, but they let the Jubilee kind of take over. And then you flip the page and, oh my gosh, it's beautiful, right? This is a genuinely happy time, it looks like. So while this is happening, Gunnar is escorting the police into the woods. We see Cecilia locked up underground with Longarm and Butchie, and Glenn is decapitated, and we learn the motives for Longarm and Butchie. We see in these flashbacks that they were cast underground by their mother, who is actually wearing a locket, which Cecilia is also wearing a locket. And essentially, they were cast underground, forced to live away from everyone else, you know, deemed not appropriate for society. And they traverse these underground tunnels and come across a church. And they realize that God was using followers to bring them offerings, so surely they must be worth something to him. So unable to get some kind of redemption, the end is near for a lot of the townsfolk, right? We even get the line, "Welcome to my brother's blood machine." So they're actively putting bodies in there. And as we see a return from issue one, Wayne Andrews, the beekeeper, they left him in the machine, so they have to clear him out. Butchie is in charge of this. He starts dragging him out. And we get some wild characterization here for Longarm as he wipes a tear from Cecilia's cheek.
Which is such a great touch. I think it speaks so much to his character to have, you know, it's show rather than tell, which is wonderful in a graphic medium. It's just so interesting. And I love the fact that they're not revealing reasoning behind the machine. You know what I mean? Like, they reveal why they do it, but they don't reveal why they do it in that way. It's really interesting. And every time I see the blood machine, all I can do is sit and think, what was it like when they were building this thing? You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Devin?
Yeah, absolutely. Longarm raises this weapon that is the weapon that we talked about when we were looking through the preview books. And it's that sledgehammer, Bowie knife, machete twist. And it looks like he's about to hit Cecilia. And instead, he cuts her free. So she says thank you, and she runs. Butchie then is aware of the ops. The ops definitely pull up, and they start investigating. And as Butchie returns, he obviously gets pissed with Longarm for letting Cecilia go. And the cops discover the mass grave that these brothers have created. At least 10 bodies, totally mutilated. It stinks. There's flies. Not those kinds of flies. They step on kind of like the entranceway to the underground where Longarm and Butchie are. And Gunnar says, "I think we're getting too loud." It just leaves off on such a cliffhanger. Like, they are now aware that there is something horrific going on. All these police officers. Cecilia's running away. She's escaped. So things are about to come to fruition. This was a big issue in terms of getting the plot moving forward.
On top of that, you have the motive. You have the reasoning being like, why couldn't they be ones to sacrifice to God as well? Which is like, I'm going to get a little religious here for a second. So in modern Christianity, the idea of Jesus being sacrificed is not because blood and murder is cool in the Bible. Even though a little cool, they're kind of into it. But the reason that Jesus' sacrifice is because he is the last sacrifice. No longer do people have to sacrifice lambs and cattle to God, because God has provided them a sheep in order to do that themselves. Something sinless and pure being sacrificed to God to essentially stop future sacrifices. I don't know if you know that, but that's a very big thing when it comes to like the crucifixion.
Butchie refers to Cecilia as a little lamb.
It's really interesting, because that's the thing, too, is that throughout history, sacrificing lambs and sacrificing pelts and sacrificing things on an altar was done in the name of God for many, many, many years. Yeah, I think it's definitely something that they're kind of alluding to a little bit here, and they've created their own altar in their own kind of twisted religion, which is so fucking cool.
Yeah, because like, they're underground, right? So what they're hearing is probably not actually what's going on. Like, when they're asking for some kind of payment or whatever, they are literally taking it as like the souls are payment, where on the other end, there's like a donation basket being handed about. But they're not in the church because they're underground. So I can't tell if they actually get to see what's going on or if they're just hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Their perception on everything is skewed based on the fact that they were cast underground. And what mother is putting their children underground like that and locking them up and leaving them to their own devices for survival? I would love to learn more about Mother Bleem and see what her story is, which obviously will lead to what the Bleem brothers are up to now.
God, I'm just ready for the next issues to come out, man.
I know. So you can actually pre-order up to issue 5 on Revolver, and that 5th cover is Longarm and Butchie as babies. So I think we will get a little bit more of a deep dive into their history just based on that image. But man, I can't tell you how much I want to see how this story concludes. Even if we don't get, I still am holding out a little bit of hope that, like, at the very end, we'll get this flash forward, if you will, to the star generators or something on the Dark Sentencer with the souls and the planet energy or something, right? Because it's the idea that souls need to be harvested is like a running theme throughout the Evil Inc. web here. But even if we don't get something like that, just to see what happens with these characters.
Like, I'm sitting here and I read the books and I just feel like I need more ammunition to theorize and think about the next thing. But honest to God, I think the next 2 issues that are coming out, 5 and 6, are going to break shit wide the fuck open.
Because so far, it feels like we've just been giving crumbs. Like, big things are happening.
Yep.
But in terms of, like, the lore, which is obviously what we focus so deeply upon, it's been minimal.
Specifically, I think that the flashback in issue 3, where they're talking about the church, I think that that's not a payoff. I think that that's a setup to a payoff. Because we can see in issue 5, I don't know if you've seen this, but the issue 5 cover, the Bleem brothers' mother is on the cover of that issue with a goat with horns in a dark, dark room with what looks like to be runes and kind of like an apothecary shelf. Oh, and I believe that is a reference right next to the goat to the Blair Witch.
That did look very familiar.
Oh, for sure that's the Blair Witch.
Does that have any larger contextual meaning?
I mean, yeah. When it comes to the Blair Witch, there are 2 main things that I keep in mind, which is number 1, the Blair Witch is a movie about these people who go into the woods. They are basically searching for an urban legend of a woman who lives in the woods who essentially is, it's just this evil entity, right?
Right. Found footage film, excellent, yes. ARG for promotion. But
one of the most well-known theories regarding the Blair Witch is that, like, when you talk about the Blair Witch, everyone brings this the fuck up, is that the Blair Witch isn't real. And that the 2 people who bring her out into the woods, specifically on purpose, lose the map and take her out there to be killed. An elaborate murder more than it is an investigatory thing. It's really interesting. Like, I've read a few theories about it, and it makes a lot of sense when you watch the movie.
I'll have to watch it again with that context in mind. I didn't know that that was a fan theory.
Oh, it's a huge theory. I'm not sure if that does mean anything for this story, whether the god that she believes in isn't real or whatever. I'm very curious to see if this will be very Friday the 13th. Very, very Pamela Voorhees. You know what I mean?
Okay, because she's on the cover of 3, too. So I guess that means that she will come back and we will learn more. So you've been reading these as they come out, and I've heard that some people are waiting for the entire thing to read it. And I don't necessarily know which is better. I mean, obviously, it's your preference. But I know personally, I can't wait. I don't have the patience to wait for all 6 issues to come out and read it. But it has been killer to get one of these. And then it leaves off on, like, just as we're starting to get right to where we're going to think about getting some information, it ends. And then the next issue picks up. And it's obviously they have to do that to keep the story interesting and keep it going, but it's painful. It's really, really difficult because it's something that we've waited so long for.
I agree with that. I mean, yeah, if it were me, I'll be honest with you, I'd wait for it all to come out, because at this point, there's a lot of waiting and not a lot of theorizing. Because if it's a lot of theorizing, then yes, I think it's worth reading issue by issue. But with this, I would hold off until it's all out, and then you'll get the full beats as they were intended to be read.
But yeah, issues 2 and 3, they really, the characters are introduced, the antagonists are introduced in 2, and in 3, we really get to see what's going on behind the scenes, what the Blood Machine does, or what it's trying to do. And Cecilia escapes, the police now know of the locations of all these bodies and what's going on. So I guess the 6 issues does make sense, I guess, now looking at it in this context, because the veil was kind of lifted here. Everything is now out and about and in the public eye. So there's really no going back now. I can't wait for our next My Brother's Blood Machine episode.
It'll be awesome, dude. Well, I'm super stoked. But I think that brings us to the end of this episode.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell us to go find us on social media, because the people listening to this probably already do. But if you don't, we're on Twitter at All Things Coheed, but turn those E's to 3's because that's how we do it. And we're going to be delving way deeper into My Brother's Blood Machine in a future episode, maybe with a guest. We've got a really interesting interview lined up. I don't know if that comes up after this recording. Probably, right?
Yeah.
So we've got a really interesting interview coming up that unfortunately I am unable to make, but I'm super stoked for Devin to sit down and have this conversation with this person that we will not name. We'll keep you on the line. If you want more hints about who that's going to be, like I said, go check out our social media. And this is so fun. I love talking lore, and I especially love talking My Brother's Blood Machine as the number one My Brother's Blood Machine fan in the world. So... I think that brings us to the end of this episode.
Absolutely. This has been another episode of the All Things Coheed podcast. I'm Devin.
And I'm a guy named Rob. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Okay, bet. Let's stop the recording.
Man, this series is so good.
This series is so good, dude.